Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
First up, let's take a look at the business and some other stories that are making the news this week and indeed the weekend. I'm delighted to be joined by Gina London of the Language of Leadership. She's also a columnist with the Sunday Independent. Also joining us is Doug Keating from Avalon. You're both very welcome to the programme and good morning to you both.
Morning, Bobby.
Hello, hello.
Now, great to talk to you guys. Doug, we might start with you. Irish factories showing signs of a rebound, but a frail euro is casting some shadows. Tell us more.
Yeah, so this is the October data for the Purchasing Managers Index from AIB, which is sort of a way of taking the temperature of how private sector firms in manufacturing are doing in Ireland. Essentially, any number over 50 means you're growing and people are positive. Anything below 50 is negative. So Ireland was at 51.5 in October, up from 49.4 in September. So that's positive. And the report shows that purchasing managers are upping their activity based on growing order books. I guess on the negative side, it shows export orders down, and it's saying that's due to weakness in Europe. And although Ireland's performance was good and positive, it was better than the Eurozone, UK and the US, the Eurozone Purchasing Managers Index was only at 45.9. So that is showing things aren't all great in Europe. The article includes a comment that Christine Lagarde, the ECB president, made to Le Monde around inflation, where she says lower inflation, the objective is in sight, but I'm not going to tell you yet that inflation is under control. And the reason that's important, I guess, is because if the ECB can win its battle with inflation, then it will be able to lower interest rates quicker. And that perhaps could help to jumpstart the European economy, which in particular in Germany, which I think we're going to come on to later, is troubled and things aren't going great. So good news for Ireland, but across Europe, not so positive.
And Gina, these are the best figures we've had in 2 years. And one important distinction around these numbers is that manufacturing by its nature brings fresh money into the economy rather than recycling money that we already have. So they're very, very important in terms of getting a temperature of how the economy is actually doing.
Yeah, absolutely. The Irish manufacturing sector had been stuck and we hadn't had an uptick in the sector since February. So this is significant in that. And it does show that there is a sign of rebound going on. And there, with even just a modest growth, is a tick in the right direction. But it certainly is an improvement that is not being seen in other areas. And so it would be interesting to see if that can continue at the pace amidst all the other concerns and the ongoing uncertainties, of course, around the war in Ukraine and the Middle East and the potential for energy costs even go higher around for Europeans and whether or not that might have an impact.
Okay. Now, Gina, this is your space because the next story I want to talk about is your area of expertise, and it's around Cliff Taylor's column in today's Irish Times. And this is around the Trump and the possibility, if it is actually possible, that he could win, and what a win might mean for us here in Ireland. Tell us more about your take on Cliff Taylor's article.
Yes, well, I'm going to put on my appropriate foreboding tone of voice for this because it is not a good look. It's not a good forecast by Mr. Taylor as he's looking ahead to Trump's policy and his agenda and how it might ripple across to not only impact Ireland, of course, but the entire world. But so here we are just days before the election. At the time that we're talking right now, we've got about 60 million early votes already in. And of course, then on Tuesday, probably more like Wednesday or Thursday, we'll actually have some real results. But Cliff is doing the forecast of what if we have a Trump White House and we also have potentially Republicans maintaining the House and taking over the Senate. And the Senate is held right now by the narrowest of margins. And there's a really tough battle in the state of Montana, by the way, for a Senate race. And if that Senate goes in the way of Republicans, then it looks like we're going to probably have Republicans in control of Congress. And so who's in the White House is going to make a big difference. And if it is all Republican in those three parts of the executive and the legislature, then Taylor is predicting that some of these promises that we've been hearing from Trump, starting with tariffs, for example, are going to have a real impact on what might happen to the American economy and, of course, the trade policy then with Ireland, because Trump's been promising to put 60% of a tariff on China, but to 10 to 20% on other places. And that effect could not only, of course, be a tax increase for Americans, but it could also then result in increased debt and just this whole ripple effect about what might happen. And also then we're thinking about, is he going to also increase the tax rate for corporates? Because he not increase to slash it and make it more competitive, excuse me, with Ireland. So he has been saying he already reduced it when he was president in the first time around. So now he's saying he wants to take it down from 21 to 15, which is going to make it right at odds with Ireland. And that is another big threat. So this whole potential result could really be something that is going to be something that Ireland needs to watch. And this hit to the global trade is not only going to be impacting the U.S. and then the world, but of course, also very much around Ireland. And he uses this term, which I think is important too, this whole campaign that Trump has been America first, America first. Economic nationalism is really at the crux of all of this and how it can threaten our global economy.
Doug, have you a take on this? Very sage words there from Gina around Cliff Taylor's piece. It only looks like bad news for Ireland if Trump gets in.
Yeah, and I think Gina picked up a key phrase there, the economic nationalism that is embedded in a lot of Trump's policies. And the concern has to be that this increase in tariffs encourages tit-for-tat behavior around the world, and we get damage across the global economy. There's an interesting stat from the Peterson Institute in the article, which is reminds us that actually an increase on tariffs, Trump makes a big issue of how he's challenging China and challenging all these countries that he claims are stealing U.S. jobs, and he believes tariffs can help bring them back. But the Peterson Institute does note that you increase tariffs is essentially going to mean goods become more expensive for consumers. It estimates it will cost U.S. consumers per person €2,600, so close to $3,000 a year more if he does get into the White House. For now, I will just be crossing my fingers and toes and hoping and praying that Cliff's words are just chip paper and won't matter. But we do have to wait and see, and it seems too close to call at the moment.
Absolutely. And when I have you there, Doug, let me move you to the British economy, because the pound nosedived on Thursday as investors are fretting now over the British budget. So what's going on over there?
Yes, so budgets sometimes can be damp squibs, but the UK budget this week was a big fiscal event, as it's described by a Morgan Stanley economist in this piece. £70 billion of extra money, £40 billion in tax rises, £30 billion in additional borrowing. Obviously, the Labour government and the new Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, hope and believe they can use that to stimulate growth and restore what many people would describe as the UK's creaking public services. The markets did react. The pound falling on Thursday, recovering a bit on Friday. Bond yields spiking, so that's where the cost of servicing the national debt potentially going up. Look, I think that argument is being played a bit by the Tories and the right in terms of how big that market swoon was. It's certainly a lot less than we saw with Liz Truss's mad mini budget back in September 2022. One other thing I think, though, is you are seeing is that there is an expectation now that the Bank of England may reduce interest rates at a slightly slower pace. So the budget not without an impact on the markets, but I think perhaps overdone.
Gina, back to you, and some more good news for Ireland. Microsoft adding 550 jobs, covering AI and cybersecurity roles. The tech giant recruiting 120 jobs immediately. This is really good news for Ireland, particularly as it's in the tech sector.
Absolutely. I mean, Microsoft's been here for 40 years in the country. They're going to be celebrating that coming up next year. And so in the ever-growing, exponentially interesting space of AI and cybersecurity, they're adding their new jobs announcement, 550 total overall. They're going to be increasing their numbers within here in Ireland to 4,000 employees. So get your CVs ready to go. And if you've got an interest in AI or you've got an experience in cybersecurity, this is the place for you. And it does once again show how important and linked the U.S. tech companies are to Ireland. And back to Cliff Taylor's article, when you think about the impact that could be happening if we actually do have 4 years of a Trump presidency, how that could affect the tech industries, which just were recovering, actually, after there were a lot of layoffs, of course, after the lockdown in 2021, and there were a series of people that were losing their jobs. Now we're getting to see a bit of a recovery around that. And so these new jobs are going to be coming on here in the center, the Global Operations Service Center for Microsoft, and they've chosen this area to launch, essentially, and to grow their AI and cybersecurity departments and divisions. It's a very good thing, but it's also something I think is tinged with a little bit of potential dark clouds coming around it in the face of what might be happening at the end of the U.S. election when the results are actually called. But for now, anyway, let's focus on the positive and new jobs coming into Ireland in the form of tech jobs with Microsoft.
Yeah, no, excellent. It is good news. And you're right, let's celebrate it now. But it doesn't take away from what we chatted about earlier and Cliff Taylor's piece in the Irish Times. Doug, a man who made a wonderful contribution to Ireland, to Dubai, in the duty-free, the world of duty-free, Colin McLaughlin has sadly died after a short illness. This man made some contribution, did he not?
He certainly did. I didn't know him personally, but it's been very interesting reading about his significant achievements during a stellar career. Colin McLaughlin was part of a group of consultants that were sent by what was then Air Reinta, which is the forerunner to what we now call the DAA, in 1983 to help Dubai Airport launch its duty-free. In 1984, that business had sales of $20 million. Last year, it had sales of $2.2 billion. And as we know, Dubai has turned into a major hub for aviation. And through all that period until May of this year, Colin McLaughlin was the boss man. And it's amazing. It's quite inspiring to hear of a man well into his, you know, into his early 80s staying in such a senior position. And obviously, it's a sad loss. His colleagues, obviously, his family, his friends, the Dubai Duty Free Managing Director, Ramesh Siddabani, said of Mr. McLaughlin, he was a great leader who built an award-winning retail business at Dubai Airport, a true friend who touched so many lives within the travel retail industry.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, if we look at Ireland, we talk about, you know, where we're big players in aviation leasing and things. Duty Free, we've been at the forefront for decades. It all went back to a guy called Brendan O'Regan, started in Shannon. That company you mentioned, Air Reinta International, did huge work on the world stage around making duty-free what it is today. So, you know, big tribute to Colin McLaughlin. And again, our condolences to his family. Gina, insurance, I don't know if you've noticed your car insurance premium getting higher, but there never seems to be good news on the insurance front, no matter what we do.
Well, I know when you read that, it seems like claims have been down, but the insurance costs still go up. I'm not a math major, but that doesn't seem to make sense to me. So this report out of the Examiner is talking about how, hey, just in time for the holidays, your insurance premiums are going up. So that'll be a great present. And of course, the inflation that is hitting everyone around the world, really, although the U.S. inflation did go down just this last report. So that's a little little nice moment there for them. But the inflation, of course, is leading to labor and part shortages. And that means if you own a car and you need to insure it, you're going to have more money for that. You're going to have to be spending more money to get it fixed. And so I think that this is one of those situations when you talk about the average motor insurance premium is increased up to 2% now to $568 for those figures from out from the central bank. And then we've got reaction to this. Interestingly, no article, no part in this particular story says exactly why, and why in the face of all these sorts of other costs coming down, why this continues to go up despite what I was saying about the claims. And so it does say here, though, the someone from Paul Walsh from People Insurance says that high claims costs are always paid by the consumer. And so I think that is where we are. So we've got the central banks have these private motor insurance reports, and they come out and they talk about how the premiums have been increasing, and don't expect any change in this trend, because they also figures from the CSO show that the costs of care, maintenance, and repairs have risen at 10 times the rate of the inflation. And that just fascinates me when we're trying to correlate why, well, we know, I suppose, why. But anyway, so the premiums would likely fall if we could strip out all the legal bills associated with the claims pursued through the courts. And that quote is something that I think we can hang our hat on for that article.
Doug, it reminds me of the coffee prices that I used to be close to at one time. Mm-hmm. There was always a frost in Brazil that just always seemed to affect the prices one way. Insurance is the same. It never seems to come down.
No, I mean, the article does, towards the end, have some useful advice to consumers who are, you know, if your insurer comes at you with your annual renewal and you're seeing a big hike, encouraging you to shop around, but perhaps call a broker. The way you pay your insurance can reduce. So if you pay online, it's typically lower. And obviously, those who drive safely and avoid speeding tickets and the like will not have penalty points, which can up your premiums. One other issue it raises is uninsured drivers. And it notes that accidents caused by uninsured drivers and claims related to them were up 11%. So there's clearly a big issue there. And ultimately, obviously, everyone ends up paying for that, where people recklessly drive cars without being insured. Obviously, the high cost of insurance probably is linked to why people drive uninsured, but, you know, never an excuse.
Doug, you mentioned the sick man of Europe. We get back to it. Here we are. German bosses sounding the alarm on staff illness. There might be some learnings from us for us here. What do you think?
Yeah, Germany's getting a bit of a bashing today, unfortunately. This article in the Financial Times quotes data from Germany's biggest health insurer showing that in 2023 in Germany, there was an average of 19.4 sick days taken, and saying that is, you know, at a very high level. Just before we came on air, I just sort of had tried to have a look around to try and get a comparable figure for Ireland. One source quoting me 9 days for Ireland. So Germany, more than double. The thing I like most about this article, though, is some of the choice quotes that come from various German businessmen with their views on why this is happening. One gentleman talks about work-shy youngsters, talks about them being too spoilt and too self-confident. Another part of the story talks about how Tesla, Elon Musk's business, which has German operations, has tried to tackle high sick rates. What it's doing is going around and making unannounced visits to people's houses who say they're off sick. So imagine that. You're pulling a sickie and suddenly Elon Musk arrives on your doorstep. You know, there's a bit of a debate about whether this kind of approach is a good thing or a bad thing. But another quote that where someone's not mincing their words, Mr. Gerd Roders says, "I don't want to sound like an asshole, but maybe it would make people think twice." So, look, Germany's in a bit of a slump, and, you know, a lot of sick days here is maybe one of the reasons.
This article frustrated me, because just like what we were hearing from Doug there, talking about these quotes from these bosses who are upset, and that, oh, hey, if there hadn't been nearly 20 days of people being sick and for a year, that the economy would have gone up rather than had gone down how it has. What you don't hear, though, is these bosses and this work environment are people, what's it really, the sick days are a symptom of probably the culture, probably that style. If you've got, Elon Musk cronies going around knocking on doors to see if you're actually in bed sick. I mean, what kind of an atmosphere are people working in these places? And there's another thing in the data that comes out in this article that talks about how there's been, since the post-corona, there's been a steep rise in mental health cases. So something is more afoot than pure sickness that's connected to the issues in Germany. So what is it really a symptom of?
Bit more empathy Gina than me. Good to hear.
Yeah, it's great to have a good balance on our paper reviews, Doug. The extreme versus maybe the more sympathetic.
Doug found it funny. I found it frustrating. Like, who are these bosses?
I have huge sympathy for those who really are sick. But 20 days for everyone, nearly 20 days.
That's, well, that's big, right. That's something else is going on for sure.
Now, Doug, I don't know if you're a meatball man, but the meatballs at IKEA are about to take center stage because they have a new restaurant, 75 seats, we're told. Tell us more.
Yeah, well, this is two things here. This is in the London Times, and I've never actually had IKEA's famous meatballs, but I gather Gina has. And she was reading the story and getting very excited, only then to realise that this isn't actually in Ireland. This is a story that IKEA in the UK is planning to open its first standalone restaurant. So, you know, this won't be next to the store where you can buy your great flat pack furniture. This is going to be in Hammersmith in West London, fitted out for 75 diners serving their famous meatballs and mash. Also, I didn't know this, there's something called a fika in Sweden, which is where you get your coffee and your little sweet pastry. It'll be selling those. I couldn't tell, and Gina, you might have a view. Do you think this is just a sort of marketing stunt? Like, it's only 75 seats. Are they really, you know, is this something they really might make more of?
Look, I just wanted to come here to Ireland. I want it to be somewhere closer to than where that the big box is right now because it's too far for me to drive. But I love the IKEA meatballs. I'm no apologies here. I will buy the big bag of them in the freezer and bring them out over time and also, of course, with a side of the lingonberries, that's mandatory. But I hope that this is a sign of things to come. I hope they go all over the place. And what was frustrating also to me on this article is it did not say, Bobby or Doug, when this one is going to open, because I would be buying my ticket.
Well, Gina, as always, thank you. Gina London, Doug Keating, thank you both for a great review of the business stories. Always a pleasure.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.